Pleasure is about being present, and it's a muscle. And as you exercise being present for the pain, you're also deepening your capacity for the pleasure.
Exactly. So pain is the portal to a kind of reverent presence, because I think that when we stay present to pain, what we are doing is staying present to our heart. We are open, right? We are refusing to shut down our capacity to love when we can stay present to our pain.
Welcome to Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams so that you have the courage to live your best life. I'm Rebecca Mullen, a relationship coach living in Western Colorado, and today you'll hear from transformational coach and author Kirsten Hotelling-Zona. Kirsten left the safety of her position as a professor, complete with the security of lifelong health benefits, to follow her desire wherever that desire leads her. You'll hear why following your desire is always the safest decision you can make, even though it feels terrifying. You'll hear the simple but not always easy path that connects you to your desire, and you'll hear how to cultivate a habit that tunes you into your pleasure so your pleasure can guide you.
Why does pleasure matter?
Why does pleasure matter? Because pleasure is the way we know the feeling of desire. And desire is how life force energy, source energy, makes itself known to and through us. So when we are cut off from or mistrust or don't know how to receive pleasure, we are amputated, might be an extreme way to put it, but at the extreme, that's what we are, right? We're amputated, we're severed from, we're disconnected from our desire. And when we're disconnected from our desire, it's very difficult to live a fulfilled life of contribution and meaning when we are disconnected from pleasure. So another way to put that is pleasure is not auxiliary. Pleasure is not something we earn. Pleasure is not window dressing. Pleasure is the portal, and pleasure and pain are not at odds.
I have clients, Kirsten, who are nervous about their pleasure. And I got to even put my own hand in the air.
Sure. Me too.
I am nervous about pleasure, but there have been times in my life where I just could not receive the love, the joy that was being offered to me. I just held up a big stop sign and said no.
Why do
we do that?
Me too. I'll put my hand up there too. I mean, part of the reason I'm so interested in pleasure is because I too know the costs of a fraught relationship. How can we be women, right? I think I've never met a woman who doesn't have a vexed relationship, or a man, but particularly women. I don't know a single woman who doesn't have a vexed relationship with her pleasure, including all of the pleasure luminaries out there, right? I have my hunches about why it's so hard for us to receive pleasure and be in kind of right relationship with pleasure. And it's, you know, we could talk for the whole rest of the podcast on those reasons. There's cultural conditioning, there's programming about what it means to be a good woman. And then there are so many of the reasons that you investigate in your own episodes on owning your orgasm. Those roadblocks we put up to pleasure, I mean, to be in our pleasure is to be very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's to be really, really vulnerable. It is to be living inside of one's body. And it's hard to talk about it even because words somehow, can be so thought-centered. But, you know, like to receive pleasure, we have to feel safe in our bodies.
Yep.
And most of us have been taught that our bodies are unsafe places to be.
And can't be trusted.
Oh, absolutely. Your desires are to be mistrusted. Your hunger is to be mistrusted. Your lust is certainly to be questioned at the very least, right? Your desire, your pleasure will lead you astray. At worst, your pleasure is to be tamed. At best, your pleasure is to be denied.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so we're going to be using some sexual euphemisms or languaging, but we are talking about pleasure at every level, like the
absolutely
food that you ingest, the joy you have at the playground with your child, the, you know, all different kinds of pleasure. When you're lost in flow, this is one of the reels I just was watching of yours. You talked about how you were in flow writing. And then you would pause and check your phone or check on one of your kids. And you were talking about this upper limit that I can only allow myself to be lost in flow for so long. And then I got to stop. Talk about that upper limit. Yeah. And why do we have it? And how does it get in the way of receiving the true love and expansiveness that the divine can co-create with us when we own our pleasure?
Mm. I love that question. And this is an area of deep exploration for me. I mean, I am right in the midst of feeling more conscious than I ever have of those upper limits as I experience for the first time a radical revisioning of my relationship to the way I work and the way I live. So I was in academia for 25 years. And so when I left academia, I found myself moving into an experiment, not even consciously. I became hyper aware of the urge to do anything, particularly regarding my business, because I had a coaching business for about 8 years at this point. And I was noticing the urge to create. So let's say to create a reel or to create a newsletter or to create a new program or whatever. And I noticed how so often this urge to so-called create would be a response to an anxiety that was so normalized as to almost be invisible, an anxiety that was the result of some form of not enoughness. Mm-hmm. I'm not enough. I'm not doing enough. And so there would be the deep down source of I'm not enough, followed by anxiety, followed by an urge to create or do or make as a way of soothing that anxiety. And so I found myself in this experiment absolutely unable to create at all in this modality. And so I would notice the urge to create. I would notice how habitual and easy it would be to say yes. And I pivoted and I would go for a walk. I would spend time talking to one of my children. I would make a beautiful meal. I would masturbate. I would read. I would close my eyes and just breathe. And whether it took 2 hours, 2 days, or 2 weeks, I would pursue this path of pleasure until I felt filled up and nourished. And only when I felt like creating from overflow, not as a way to soothe anxiety, did I act. And this was a radical, radical learning. So this is a very long way of answering your question. You know, why do we put up that roadblock? What's up with those upper limits? Because we don't know how to hold in our bodies and sustain pleasure the literal experience of feeling good, because it is so coupled with unsafety, right? It doesn't feel safe.
What's the difference between creating from that full tank that is, I am so full of pleasure, it has to pour out of me in some kind of creative act, versus a creative thing, a production, something that is made because I must produce to be part of the game? What's the difference between the two?
I'll hearken back to the intro to your podcast. You know, when you talk about relationships and the importance of relational health, and you say, when our relationships feel good, we aren't distracted, right? We can focus on our work. We can be happy in our home lives, right? I think what you're saying is that when we feel nourished, when we feel in integrity, when we feel good inside, connected to ourselves, to life itself, to the people we love, the natural human response when we are in a healthful state is compassionate, collaborative, connective, and contributing. And so when we are producing or creating from a state of malnourishment, because we've been doing marathons on the hamster wheel of, I need to produce and produce and produce to get the raise, to get the accolade, which is the way so many of us live.
Yep. Yep.
Right? Then we are producing from a place of malnourishment, and what might be giving actually is taking. Receiving is not about being filled up. It's when we're empty, we can't actually receive, right? That's the great paradox, right? Because when we're empty, we're taking.
So talk to us about the difference between taking and receiving.
Well, and this is where I think becoming self-responsible for our pleasure is so important. And this is to go back to your first question, why is pleasure so important? When we outsource responsibility for our own pleasure and make our partner responsible for it, make our colleagues or our students or our clients or our children or our friends or whomever responsible for our own pleasure, we perpetuate the idea that we can't actually give ourselves what we need. My pleasure, my ability to feel fully fed, is about giving myself permission to question my thoughts, to be honest about the choices that I've made, to take full responsibility for the life I'm living right now, all the good, all the bad.
I can hear in what you just said, there's a huge connection in pain and pleasure.
Yeah.
And being willing to embody and receive both with equanimity, not pushing away pain, not pushing away pleasure, but letting it in so that it can move through you.
One of the mistakes we make in our thinking is that the opposite of pleasure is pain, but the opposite of pleasure is indifference. The opposite of pleasure is numbness. It's an inability to feel at all. It's an unwillingness to feel. It's resistance. That's the opposite of pleasure. Pain is on one, if we could think of pleasure and pain as the bookends or the ends of a spectrum of sensation, whether that's somatic felt sense or whether that's emotional feeling. But the exquisitely agonizing and gorgeous condition of being human is our capacity to feel.
Yes.
And when we anesthetize pain, by the belief, you know, through the belief that you know, the goal of a well-lived life is a happy life rather than a fully engaged life, a fully present life, then we you know, we tend to avoid pain. And when we anesthetize pain, we anesthetize pleasure. There's no way to selectively feel.
It's a package.
Yeah. And so that's one of the other, you know, when you ask the question, why pleasure? Why is pleasure important? Because as we develop the safety in our bodies that allows us to receive pleasure and all the attendant skills, like asking for what we want, knowing what we need, understanding what feels good, et cetera, we also develop the capacity at the same time to be present to, you know, the more difficult emotions like grief or anger or sorrow. And when we can become present to these emotions, that is to say, make space to literally feel them in our bodies without an attempt to heal or fix or overcome, but to really be with the full sensation, the full cycle of these emotions. There's so much wisdom that's mined from those experiences. And also what we develop, where we condition that muscle of presence. And presence, just the ability to be with, is the condition of joy.
Pleasure is about being present, and it's a muscle. And as you exercise being present for the pain, you're also deepening your capacity for the pleasure, and vice versa.
Exactly. So pain is the portal to a kind of reverent presence, because I think that when we stay present to pain, what we are doing is staying present to our heart. We are open, right? We are refusing to shut down our capacity to love when we can stay present to our pain.
What you just said is gorgeous, and it makes it really obvious, Kirsten, why we resist pleasure, because it's a package deal with all that pain. And right. I'm afraid. So I run away. And I want to use a really tangible example, either from your own life or something that you've noticed as a pattern in your clients. Give us an example, a real life example of how a person resists pleasure, resists receiving the human experience.
Most of my clients who come to me, they are almost uniformly disengaged from their pleasure, and they don't know it, because maybe they get regular manicures and pedicures, right? Maybe they get massages, even, you know.
Their bubble bath with the lighted candle.
Right. But they are also, for instance, I'm thinking of one beloved client whose journey has been really magnificent, who, when we started working together, she had so many physical manifestations of blocked pleasure. And so for your listeners, who want to understand, well, am I disassociated from my pleasure? Here are some symptoms of what that looks like in my practice. So, chronic autoimmune disorders. So chronic migraines, chronic TMJ, grinding of teeth, you know, really tight jaw, insomnia.
Busyness?
Yes. Busyness, and an addiction to busyness. I would say another really surefire sign that you are disengaged from your own pleasure is chronic resentment. You know, feeling a lot of the time that you resent your partner, you resent your work, you resent the things that you give and the contributions you make. You feel a lot of the time like you give so much, but you get so little in return. You feel burdened by that.
Yes.
All of these are expressions, potentially, of a disassociation from, you're a severing from your own pleasure.
What kind of kicks that off? What kicks off that disassociation? Where's the seedling for that? If I was, you know, thinking about my granddaughter, who's only 18 months old, where does it come in her life that she begins to disassociate from her own pleasure? And how can we make sure that doesn't happen?
I love that question. That is the golden question. And I want to turn it around and say, you tell me, because I know you've got some great answers to that. But oh my gosh, I mean, let's brainstorm on that. I would say shame. First of all, I mean, the way that we teach little girls from such an early age that their worth and their lovability is attached to their appearance and to their body, to their thinness, to their prettiness, to their appearance, so that your body becomes at once. And remember, the body is where you know to read your pleasure.
Yes.
When we're disassociated from the body, we don't know our pleasure. So when you learn from a very early age that your body is both the locus of your worth and also your liability, right? You can't trust your body. You can't trust your hungers, because what if you're hungry and you really want to eat, but eating makes you fat, quote unquote, and to be anything but this particular model of beauty is to be unlovable, right? So your hunger, you mistrust your hunger, but your body is also that which, you know, your body is also, you're reduced to your body, right? So this way that we teach little girls to both identify their worth with their bodies and then also to mistrust their longings, to mistrust their sexuality. We teach little girls that it's bad to be sexual, right? You don't want to be quote unquote slutty or sleazy. You have to be good. There's so much here. I know I'm saying a whole ton, but the way we train and shame girls in relationship to our bodies, it's very, very difficult to emerge into adulthood with a clean channel when it comes to our bodies.
And, you know, and thinking about how a little kid, any kind of little kid, when they are enjoying, they don't have any hesitation expressing it. It's so obvious. Little kids giggle and giggle, or if they're eating an ice cream cone and they're enjoying it, I mean, they are just, it is all over their
body. Yeah,
exactly. And then we very, in a very, I don't even know what the right word is here, but it's, we kind of create a shame that's incognito, sort of laughing, but also you can feel the energy of, enjoy it now because you don't get to have that kind of joy much longer.
Right. Exactly. This is a, you, yeah, right. That's a, yeah, it's childish. Yeah. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And it feels like as I'm thinking about the physical sensations going on in my body, when I watch a child indulge in pleasure, I feel a little self-conscious. Right. I mean,
right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's what drives me to have that nervous laughter or whatever it is that sends the message. You're enjoying too much right now.
Exactly. Well, therein lies the seed of the upper limits we were talking about earlier, right?
Yep.
Don't enjoy it too much.
What I want to know is, how does this leaning into your pleasure fill you with vitality?
It fills me with vitality. Number one, this is coming back to your beautiful introduction to your podcast that I love. When we are not living in alignment or when we're not living in integrity, what I think that really means is we're not living in alignment with what it is we really want. And when we're not living in alignment with what we want, we're not living in alignment with our pleasure. And when we're not living in alignment with our pleasure, we're in a constant state of distraction. We're always managing this energy on the side that's like, nope, that energy of distraction, distractedness, like something's not quite right. Something's at a joint over here.
I gotta shore up these mooring cables that are keeping me balanced.
Right?
Them all, like tend to them all so that I'm secure and safe. But pleasure might not be the safest thing, is what you're saying.
I think pleasure is always the safest thing.
Okay.
But I think we're really confused about what safety is. Pleasure is going to beckon us into the unknown.
Yes.
Right? It's going to take us on the untrod path, because pleasure is all about expansion. It's
right.
In alignment with life force energy. And life force energy is not about stagnation. It's not about repetition. It's about security, but it's a security that situates us so that we can grow. And that is always scary if we've located safety in the predictable,
okay,
in what's known. But I think there's so much room. I've witnessed it in my life and in my clients' lives and my students' lives. I'm sure you have too. I've witnessed that it's really possible to revise that understanding. It's really possible to rewire our relationship to safety and to become a whole lot more comfortable with the unknown.
Yeah. And to flow in that state of the unknown.
Yeah. To flow, to welcome possibility.
Actually, the biggest safety, because so many of those predictable mooring cords, you know, that are keeping you anchored,
yeah,
they can bust from tension or
totally, yes,
wear out. And so the ultimate safety is to be able to feel safe as you flow into the unknown and just keep welcoming. It goes back to pleasure is about presence.
Yes, being with.
Yep.
Yeah. Being with. Pleasure is rooted in, feeds, serves, being with, right? I think of divine mother energy, divine mother archetypes, Isis, Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, right? The frequency that they all represent is this capacity, this archetypal capacity to be with.
Can you tell us the story of how Mary Magdalene is a with kind of person?
Ah, well.
We're used to stories of she's the prostitute, she's the whore,
right.
She should be stoned, you know.
Yes, I love this question. I've actually been reading Mary Magdalene's gospel. And my understanding of Magdalene is that she was Christ's love. She was Christ's great partner in sacred union on this earthly plane. And she was a disciple. She was a devotee. She was also a high priestess. Basically, she was a priestess in the truest sense of the word. She'd been schooled and educated for a long time with regard to Tantra. So sex magic. That's not like devil worship. It's harnessing life force energy, you know, sexual energy. The understanding of sexual energy is creative life force energy at its most elemental, right? Generative energy at its most elemental. And learning how, this is the practice of Kundalini yoga, right? Learning how to manipulate, move, harness, and really work with the body's life force energy. So there are scholars, for instance, and people who believe that Magdalene and her relationship, her tantric relationship with Yeshua, with Jesus, was essential to developing what's called his energy body or his Ka body, so that she was in fact deeply responsible for his resurrection. Her being with, right? So you asked, how is a story of being with? Like her ability to stay with, be with Jesus through his crucifixion, to witness the murder of her beloved, to tend to his body, to go to his grave. To me, I see in her story an incredible capacity for love.
And by just staying, by just staying during the crucifixion, coming to the tomb. She was there when the rock, the stone was rolled away, right?
She was the first witness. Yes.
I'm just going to show up. I'm going to be present.
Yes.
For all the feels, pleasure and pain.
Yeah. And it's that divine mother, that divine feminine frequency that is, we all have access to that within. That is the reward, right? It is both the source of and the reward of pleasure, right? Deeply embodied reverence of, devotion to, trust in pleasure, because what that essentially is the love that never leaves.
The love that just keeps being present, showing up.
Because when we can be present to whatever human experience we have in the moment, whether it's the most profound agony of watching our beloved be crucified, or the most extraordinary magic, the most ecstatic experience we could possibly imagine, the more capacity we have to be with ourselves and not run away, not numb, not avoid, right? The more capacity we have to be with whatever is moving through us, the more courage we have, the less fearless we become, right? Mm. And that is why pleasure and vitality are inextricable. My understanding of vitality is simply aliveness, like how much aliveness can I feel?
And that's right? About showing up for life and saying, yes, life, whatever you have to dole out, I'm here to receive it.
Yes, nice. Yes, I'm here to receive it.
All right, Kirsten, give us a habit to cultivate pleasure.
This may sound very unsexy and just sort of conventional, but I still maintain that the most important practice for pleasure or for any, you know, vital life is meditation. Mm-hmm. And that can look like sitting for 10 minutes in the morning. It can look like a 2-hour practice. I think 10 minutes is fine. And I want to be very clear about what I mean when I talk about meditation. I do not mean necessarily guided meditations on Insight Timer, though I think those are wonderful and I listen to them and I make them myself. I also do not mean emptying the mind or stilling thoughts, or the mind is a thinking apparatus. So by meditation, all I mean is the practice of mindfulness. It's a practice of being with. Let's sit down. Let's keep the spine erect. Let's relax our bodies around our spines. Let's close our eyes. Let's take a couple of breaths to just bring our attention into this moment, into this room. Let's take a moment to notice the birds chirping, the sound of the refrigerator humming, the rustle that our dog is making over in the corner, whatever, just bring myself here now. And then with your next exhale, drop that attention down into the body. Drop your focus from the thoughts to the body, into your heart space. Locate the rise and fall of your chest as you inhale and you exhale. And then I just invite you to stay in this space, noticing your breath in and out, the rise, the fall of your chest. And notice your thoughts pulling you into the future, pulling you into the past, the things you've got to do, the project you are involved in, what's happening with your partner. Whatever. Notice it. You might note, thinking, and let it go. So in this way, you keep bringing your focus back to the breath, just noticing your breathing. And maybe you can sustain that noticing for 2 seconds before your thoughts start to take you down the stream again. But you stand on that bridge, and instead of jumping on the boat that is your thought and heading downstream, you stay on the bridge and you let the boat pass by. So mindfulness practice, meditation, is simply developing the witness consciousness, developing the ability to observe the weather patterns of your own thinking without identifying with it. So you widen that ability. It's literally like lifting weights for pleasure, like you're developing the actual capacity to be with what rises without repressing it or becoming it. That's why meditation is so crucial. So that is the number one.
And you know what I'm noticing is we were just talking about being with.
Yeah.
And that's why meditation, you know, like, why has that not occurred to me before this moment? But it's the context of this moment that's helping me see meditation or mindfulness is just, you're not controlling your thoughts. You're not making your thoughts the bad guys. You're not that grocery list that we all have in our brain. You're not making it the bad guy. You're just letting it pass by and being with your body.
Exactly.
Oh, I love that.
Do you want me to talk about my second habit? Okay, so self-pleasuring. So I think a self-pleasuring practice for everybody is so important. So I'll say a couple of words about why I think it's important, and then I'll offer an actual self-pleasuring practice. So I think self-pleasuring, and I'm talking about sexual self-pleasuring, is important, number one, because especially as women, we often don't know what we like. It often takes time to explore. I mean, it's through self-pleasuring that we discover what we like, what feels good. Every woman's body is so different, and we need to find out what we like in order to give us more of what we want. When we learn how to experiment and ignite new sensations of pleasure in our bodies, we too feel like queens, right? It's really empowering to be in control of our pleasure in that way. It's incredibly empowering. And so that's really important. It's also healthy. Like, you know, use it or lose it. I mean, it's just like any part of your body. If you don't use it, the muscle atrophies, the blood flow, you know, circulates less to that region. And female pleasure, like male pleasure too, it's all about blood flow. So you need to really keep using your muscles, activating the area, stimulating your tissue if you want to keep that region of your body alive. And the third reason I would offer, the reason I think self-pleasure is so important, is because it cultivates intimacy with oneself.
Yeah.
Right? It cultivates self-trust. Many of us have been taught that our bodies are ugly, that our vulvas are ugly. Many of us have been taught that the way we look is shameful. For a lot of us, it's a big leap to just go from derision to neutrality. Can I look at myself with neutrality? Instead of saying you're ugly or you are beautiful, can I look at myself and say, I have a vulva. This is my vagina. Just this is mine. This is me. Can I start there? That can be a big leap for a lot of us.
When you talked about the third reason being intimacy with yourself, I think it is what you just said, that I see me.
Yeah.
I see my body. Can I be with?
Yes.
Can I be with my body?
When I teach my women self-pleasure practices, I teach a practice that one of my most wonderful coaches, Zoe Kors, taught me a beautiful self-pleasuring practice that begins with you move up your body, learning to touch yourself sensually, lovingly, patiently. And at the very, very end, you can allow yourself to move towards orgasm if that's what you want. But the whole point is to practice touching oneself with reverence, with patience, with curiosity.
And when we can learn the pleasure in holding ourselves, that's the seedling right there, right?
It is.
I am with.
And that goes back to what we were saying too, that, you know, pleasure really begins with safety. We can't receive pleasure if we don't feel safe in our bodies. Right? We will not be open. The heart won't be open. The nerve endings won't be open, right? We will be literally braced and guarded.
Yes.
And when we're braced and guarded and we're expecting to be hurt, or we're trying to protect ourselves from being hurt or abandoned, we can't open to pleasure. We literally can't receive, even though it's the thing we want most in the world. And therein lies the torment, right? So many of us are hungering to be loved, hungering to be touched in ways that feel good, hungering to receive. And yet we don't know that we're blocking it. We don't know that we are scared. We don't know that our bodies are braced against the very thing we long for, right? And so it really begins with safety, and safety begins with being with ourselves.
Right? Kirsten, thank you so much.
I love the connection Kirsten draws between mindfulness and pleasure. The ability to receive pleasure resides in our ability to notice and feel what is true. We do this when we tune into the present moment, when we stay for the moment unfolding. When I do this, when I notice what I feel, I notice how uncomfortable I got when Kirsten was talking about Mary Magdalene and the generative energy of presence that is cultivated by sexual magic. I'm 100% there when she talks about divine mother energy as the presence of being with. I know what it feels like to be the mother who stays, the mother who is just present with her child when there's a skinned knee. I'm comfortable being the mother who holds her child. I can do that kind of staying almost without effort. But staying in the sexual magical energy, I feel myself resist. I feel myself wanting to escape. It's too much. Is that shame creeping in? Overwhelm of pleasure? I'm so curious about this resistance inside myself. And I wonder if you have a similar hesitation to stay in these moments. Can you truly be with in those moments of sexual explosion that generate a new level of connection with your sweetheart? Can you be with yourself in those moments? I want to stay in those moments. I want to feel all the feels. And I'm scared too. I don't know what to do except practice. To stay as long as I can, as deeply present as I can, and then forgive myself for needing distraction, for breaking the spell of rapture. I'm going to try. I'm going to try trusting my pleasure, and I'm going to see where desire leads me. Now you tell me, what do you notice about your desire? What gives you pleasure? What happens when you feel pleasure bubbling up inside you? And where do you notice yourself resist? Text me at 970-210-4480 and let me know. I love being included in your life. That's it for today. I'm Rebecca Mullen, and this has been Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're better able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams so you can have the courage to live your best life. If you enjoyed this podcast, I'd be grateful if you'd send a link to your friend. Habits for Your Happily Ever After is produced by Grace Smith. All our music and sound comes from Walk West Productions. I'm Rebecca Mullen. Thanks for including me in your relationship today.